Let me tell you about something new. A new show called G's Power.
G's Power.
Real talk for real saints.
Are you ready?
And it's for real.
Welcome to G's Power Hour, live every weekday at 11:30 a.m. on Never Had It So Good Entertainment Network. Your host, G, will bring you informative and entertaining guests and a variety of topics in a way that you can absorb and enjoy. Listen in weekdays and call in at 516-387-1944. We love interaction. All shows can be downloaded if you miss one or found on iTunes the next day. G's Power Hour is powered by Never Had It So Good Sports Media Network.
G's Power Hour.
Yeah.
Well, good morning, brothers and sisters, kings and queens, angels and saints, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to G's Power Hour on Never Had It So Good Entertainment. I am your host, G. Thanks so much for being with us today. And again, thanks to Mark Peace yesterday from Florida Housing Finance Corporation, as it is still National Home Ownership Month, has some very practical, very interesting information. So, you know, if you missed it, just pull the show up and listen to it again on Block Talk Radio. I never had it so good entertainment. So in the meantime, one of our favorite people is back. Because just because the sentencing is over does not mean the issues are over. We're talking about the Derek Chauvin case and some of the other things that are coming up. And we have Kevin Anderson here this morning. Good morning, Attorney Anderson. How are you?
Good morning. Good morning. I'm doing fine. Thank you for asking. How are you?
I'm doing well, doing quite well. So, and always grateful to have you back on the show. So. Let's. I want to go back. I know it's been a couple of days, but you know you've been terribly busy doing your real job. So I appreciate any time I can get with you. But so we want to talk a little bit about the sentencing of the former police officer Derek Chauvin and the murder of George Floyd and the 22 and a half year sentence. And I wanted to get your perspective. Was it good enough? What is it not enough? What were your expectations? And how did this measure up?
I didn't actually see the sentencing hearing. I did read the judge's sentencing order and his memorandum. And, of course, you know, I caught the media coverage pertaining to the sentencing to kind of get a perspective of where the defense – began their request and also the government's request for the imposition of sentence. I'll be totally frank. It did not appear, and I'm speaking about this, the imposed sentence. The imposed sentence did not appear to be consistent with the type of sentence in duration of imprisonment, which is consistent where a person is convicted of second-degree felony murder, third-degree murder, and an additional count of manslaughter, which is done through culpable negligence. So I was a little surprised. I kind of expected a sentence that would have been not less than 20 years. I was sort of thinking that the court would have imposed perhaps a sentence that would have been or maybe top of the guidelines. So that's my response about my expectations. I am not very critical of the court. I did critique the court, and I think that the sentence was rational, but it doesn't mean that I agree with the imposition.
Okay. All right. Well, what would you have rather have seen? What I would like out is, I guess, what would have been, was it an effective sentence? sustenance, I guess. Was it balanced? You know, and the reason I ask that, because I guess, and unfortunately, even though this is just one man's life, at the same time, there's the community at large, there's the African-American community, there's the police community, and I guess what I want to get from your opinion is, do you think it satisfied those communities?
Again, the court's reasoning was rational for the sentence imposed.
Mm-hmm.
Now, whether everyone is satisfied is, you know, predictable, and the answer is no. Everyone
mm-hmm.
will never be totally satisfied.
Right.
So you have to seek a sentence that, and I think in this case, would promote public safety, would also recognize sentencing disparities for similar defendants and crimes. In addition, a sentence that would be proportionate to the severity of the offense, as well as offender criminal history characteristics and biological or biographical characteristics. So this sentence hit all of those prongs, and the court was careful to make note of that during the sentencing process. Now, whether the black community is happy or whether the community that is made up of other diversities, whether they're happy, I don't think that's ever the court's concern. The court is looking to hit the prongs that I just spoke about.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not unhappy. I'll tell you that I'm not unhappy, and I don't think that mm-hmm. the black community is unhappy. I just think that there are expectations and were expectations that may not have been met here.
Okay, all right. So now I saw something today that, and I guess what I'm thinking is that when Derek Chauvin made his statement, this is probably what he was alluding to, but I see that there might be a plea deal with regards to the civil case involving Derek Chauvin. Can you talk about that a little bit?
I did catch a glimpse of that as well. That has been sort of under wraps ever since the indictment was handed down for the civil rights violations. During the sentencing hearing, Derek Chauvin stated, quote, that there is going to be other information of interest in that I hope this will give you peace of mind, unquote.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah,
I believe that he was trying to infer that when the federal case is wrapped up, that there would be some expression of remorse and, you know, something beyond his bare bones condolences that he extended to the family, you know, because he never said, I'm sorry. He never apologized.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that the sentence or the deal that's in the works is looking to consist of a 20 to 25 year period of incarceration, which would run concurrently with the state sentence that Chauvin is presently undergoing. You know, those talks are not, and what you're getting now, you're getting leaks here, you're getting leaks there, and we really, you know, aren't privy to the plea negotiations, and which is not it's not unusual, especially, you know, when you're dealing with a high-profile case like this, and you know, things are fluid from the moment to moment.
My thinking in terms of this, his sentence running concurrently, is probably more beneficial for him than it is for anybody else.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, a concurrent sentence means that you're doing both at the same time. So
mm-hmm.
when one ends, you might have a little bit to do on the other one, but, you know, you're basically traveling, you know, along the road together. It's like riding down the turnpike with five on the other side. You know, you're going in the same direction. The question is, like,
mm-hmm.
when you're going to get off the highway. So, you know, when the deal is all said and done in the state case, for example, you know, basically he's going to do 15 years as long as he doesn't screw up while he's in custody. And, you know, he's keeps getting out, you know, when he's, you know, going to be able to recover to some degree economically. There's going to be, you know, for most people, if you look at the stats, you know, a lot of living left for him. And, you know, 15 years for what happened and for the turmoil that this country had to deal with, and the civic and social unrest that we were, you know, handling and managing, especially like during the pandemic at the same time. When you look at 15 years, that's really nothing. It's just nothing.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, again, you know, I critique without being critical
right.
the court sentencing. And, you know, I think the reasons for the sentence are, you know, the reasons were rational, and you know, the reasons were based on the law. I just am being clear that 15
mm-hmm.
years to actually
mm-hmm.
do in prison for
mm-hmm.
The cruelness and the conscious deliberation that had to go into that cruelty resulting in George Floyd's death, it appears that more than 15 years should be handed down for a person to do in prison because of this. So that's what I have to say. You know, I just, and I feel that way, and a lot of people do. You know, I took the liberty of looking at, like, a lot of comment from the legal community, from the entertainment community, from the political community, from everyday walks of life in the area where I live. And the majority of people, when they learn that ultimately 15 years could be the most that Sheldon does in prison,
mm-hmm.
did not agree with that mm-hmm. amount of time to be spent behind bars.
Well, let me ask you something. Do you think, what is your, I guess, perception, what is your guess, I guess best guess, let's put it that way, in terms of his, what is his survival going to be like in prison? With, unfortunately, it seems a predominantly black population or a large black population in prison, some at the hands of police officers who may have been, let's say, unkind, I'm putting that mildly, during the arrest process when some of these people went to jail, and now they're in jail with this person mm-hmm. who actually killed a black man. How do you think, what do you think is going to happen with him? Will he be in some sort of isolation or protective type of custody, or what do you think is going to happen?
Absolutely. Police officers get convicted all the time, and these individuals go into our prison systems, both at the state and the federal level. There is protective custody, which is set up to isolate the detainee or the convicted while they're doing their time. And in addition, there are location decisions which are strategic in nature. But for example, he's in Minneapolis. Under interstate compact agreements, one state may agree to exchange their officers in order to create a level of anonymity so that the prison population and the viewing audience, so to speak, won't be aware that Mr. Chauvin is amongst them. These things are done very quietly. They are done so discreetly until oftentimes even the staff at the prison may not know that he is amongst them. This could happen. Let's say if he's in Minnesota, he could wind up going to a prison in North Carolina or, you know, maybe New Hampshire or something. And he may stay there for a year or two, and then he may go someplace else. So in addition, there's something known as close management, where there are prison officials who are tasked with watching his every move. Now, we know that that kind of didn't work out with Jeffrey Epstein. He wound up dying, and it certainly didn't work out with Jeffrey Dahmer. We know that, you know, things can happen. But he doesn't have to worry about being in what's known as general population. That's not going to happen. You watch these movies where a person is out in the prison yard, you know, walking around, you know, smoking a butt, and, he's worrying about being shanked or something like that, you know, while he's, you know, kicking rocks and stuff. You know, I don't think that you're going to see that with him. He'll be escorted perhaps to recreation. There'll be limited periods of time where he intermingles with people who are imprisoned with him. His communication would be curtailed. They may even change his name. His identity may be different. So, and please understand, he has rights. You know, just because he's convicted, it doesn't mean that if something happens to him while he's in custody, that there would not be liability for his bodily injury or death. Those lawsuits are filed every day in this country.
We are here with civil rights attorney Kevin Anderson of Anderson & Welch. This is G's Power Hour. I've never had it so good entertainment. If you have questions or comments, the number is 516-387-1944. G's Power Hour, I've never had it so good entertainment. We'll be right back.
Over the past 60 years, Dove Beauty Bar's superior formula has remained unchanged. But when it comes to beauty, everything changed. Together, we redefined beauty. We said no to stereotypes and yes to every type. We let go of judgments and embraced what makes us unique. We're proud to have been there with you, caring for you every step of the way. Here's to the next 60 years.
Having a wedding, reception, family reunion, planning a banquet, or some other fundraising event. Need to share your knowledge through a workshop or seminar, or it's a difficult time and you need to plan a wake or repast. Let us help. At our gatherings, let us reduce the stress and make the occasion memorable, treasured. Call our gatherings at 407-968-9387 or email ourgatherings@yahoo.com. Let us help plan your special event.
Good morning. Welcome back to G's Power Hour. I've never had it so good entertainment. I am your host, G. Thanks so much for being with us today. We are here with civil rights attorney Kevin Anderson of Anderson & Welch here in Florida. And so I guess one of the things that we were talking about that we've been through over the past year with this trial, but one of the things that, you know, is kind of, I guess, uncertain is how we go forward right now with police and community relations, especially with the Black community. And because we still have cases that have yet to be decided where there have been some alleged police misconduct. But at the same time, we are having an issue now with, I guess, a high level of retirees in the police force now. And problems hiring police officers, and I don't think that was ever meant to be the intent with this case. I think it was just a matter of accountability, correct?
Yes, I think the collateral damage has been a deficit in employment for police agencies with respect to the tenured officers continuing on with their service, and also recruitment of officers who are interested in law enforcement careers. This case has awakened the senses. And for those who were amongst the ranks when this case happened, problems arose in interacting between officers who were of different races. Problems also arose, believe it or not, because of political affiliations. There were lines and divisions drawn based on the liberals and the conservative viewpoints, because both parties were very present and visible concerning their opinions about what should or should not be happening throughout the country, which of course included other cases in addition to the George Floyd matter. We're changing. We're watching police reform at its very roots right now. We've got a bill that's pending in the Senate, the United States Senate right now, the George Floyd Police Reform Act. A lot of states have changed the way they do business. In fact, here in Florida, with the anti-riot law, as it's called in the colloquial, that is a direct result of the responses throughout our country concerning unrest because of police activity. So you're going to see a different type of officer. You're going to see the agencies perhaps a little bit younger. You're going to see the use of force done in a different manner and recorded pretty much all the time. Most states have enacted the body-worn camera provision or the cam, the dash cam provision to make sure that, you know, there is transparency in what's taking place in the field. In addition, the access to police reports so that there may be oversight has just broadened. I can't tell you, how much what we have been privy to has increased my opportunity to receive documentation pretty much when things happen, whereas before I would have to wait a considerable amount of time when trying to obtain a response to a request for a public record.
The thing that I've noticed, too, is that, and I shouldn't say trivial, but the trivial stuff that police used to, let's say, pull you over for, the streets are almost, in some cases, I've seen more police activity than I've seen in a long time, I tell you, in terms of pulling people over, and in a way, that's not necessarily good, because one of the things that also happened with COVID, unfortunately, were people that decided they could just drive like maniacs, and even though the roads are getting congested again, you still see a lot of people driving like maniacs. And no one is trying to, they're not doing as many of the, let's say, traffic stops or speed traps or whatever the case may be to kind of regulate what's going on in the road. And it's causing a lot of severe accidents. I always tell my husband, I'm always pointing at him, look, there's some more curb art. And I'm kidding with him, but, it's like car bumpers that are just left on the side of the road where you've had accidents and stuff like that. So I sense there's just like some reluctance to do just some of the easy basic stuff, by law enforcement for fear that they will you know, get caught, you know, doing, you know, even if they're doing the right thing, maybe it's getting, it may be perceived as doing something that they're not supposed to be doing. You know, I even find myself kind of looking every time I see someone stopped, especially, unfortunately, especially an African-American person, especially a young African-American male, you know, because I'm thinking about cousins I have and other things that, you know, that I'm always looking to see, okay, you know, is this being handled properly? So I guess, you know, I'm concerned that the whatever officers we have, whether or not it's the ones that are veteran officers or even new ones, will be maybe somewhat reluctant to do their jobs.
I would be reluctant to do my job if I knew that, you know, everything I said was being recorded, every move I made. You know, there is a movie essentially with me, you know, starring in it. That at some point would be handed to a lawyer if I, you know, made a bad decision, and God help me if, you know, things didn't go well, you know, I, you know, because, you know, I'd feel like at this point, this is open season against police officers, because, you know, every jury is looking at them sideways, and, you know, most municipalities are starting to, you know, hand out money for things that, you know, yesteryear wouldn't even get you, you know, an audience with a city manager. And, you know, you're looking at these epic settlements, and the officers don't have really much to say about the negotiations. They just kind of sit back and, you know, wait for their agencies to negotiate with offices like mine in order to resolve the dispute. So, you know, yeah, I'd be very reluctant if I were a police officer in the field.
That's sad. That's sad.
It is very sad.
Yeah. So yeah. The other thing I wanted to talk to you about, I mean, let's just say, is there anything else that you want to focus on or highlight with regards to the Derek Chauvin case?
There is. There is, I think an appreciation for how the court got to its conclusion by some people. Some people just don't care. All they want to know was, you know, how much time did he get? But there are other people,
right,
who I think, you know, feel like, okay, well, what were the factors? You know, what did the defense request? What did the state request? What, you know, how did the court sort of, you know, knock this mountain down into a pebble and then grind it into powder, you know? And so I did want to address that because, you know, it's important. As you are aware, you may not be so aware, the defense requested probation in this particular case.
Right.
Now, I'm just going to be frank with you. You know, I'm a civil rights lawyer, but I also practice criminal defense. The first thing you want to do is keep the judge's attention. You know, you want to get his attention. You want to keep it. You know, nothing turns the judge off more than for you to be unrealistic. You know, you walk into a murder sentencing hearing requesting probation. It's just like,
I'm sorry, I know it's funny, but it's not funny. But yeah, I kind of like, okay, what do you do with that?
It's like, are you nuts? Like, what, dude, bro? Look, why don't we just, like, you know, just like, you let me know when you're done talking, and then I'll start listening again. You know, that's unheard of. And sometimes your clients will ask you to do, like, just unreasonable, ridiculous stuff. You know, and that was not only unreasonable, but that was, like, absurdly ridiculous. You know that's not going to happen, man. You know he's going away. So, like, why don't you start talking about, like, you know, how much time and why it would be okay to do, like, you know, a smaller amount of time rather than a larger amount of incarceration. And so so the court had to determine two things, whether the disposition, which was the probation request, and also the duration of the sentence was reasonable under the circumstances, because that request has to be dealt with according to certain legal provisions. You know, the court just can't say, oh, it sounds crazy. Shut up, man. Let's go to something else. No, the court has to seriously weigh your request, and there are applicable laws which must be applied to that request in order to deny you. So in this particular case, the court stated that, first of all, in terms of a probation request, that Mr. Chauvin wasn't particularly amenable to probation. Okay, and there was some case law to support that conclusion. And with respect to the duration of any punishment, the court based its decision on the seriousness of the crime, the gravity of the crime, and decided that this had to consist of some level of custody. So that was kind of like how the court deflected the request by the defense for probation. And with respect to the actual sentence itself, you may recall that the court was in the position to identify certain factors that the court wanted to utilize for purposes of giving Derek Chauvin a higher sentence. The court has a statutory sentence to consider, and then there is something known as a sentencing guideline. Guideline carries with it a minimum range for sentencing and a higher range for sentencing. And in this particular case, the court had to make decisions in order to exceed those guidelines based upon what's known as a substantial and compelling reason to do so. And that's precisely what the court did. Okay, so the court first found that Chauvin abused his position of trust. That was the first factor that the court used. And the court looked to what's known as a power imbalance between Mr. Floyd and Derek Chauvin, in that there was no way that Mr. Floyd could protect himself in a handcuffed and prone position. And then second, that Derek Chauvin had access to Mr. Floyd because of his position of trust and appointment as a police officer. So that was kind of a no-brainer. And then, you know, the court went into, you know, the placement of his knee on Mr. Chauvin's back, failure to render aid, and then the domination and control exerted over to Mr. Floyd, over Mr. Floyd, as he lay there begging for his life and as he was so vulnerable to Chauvin and, you know, had to even listen to the fellow officers. One of them actually asked Derek Chauvin to flip or turn over Mr. Floyd because it seemed like that probably would have been a better move, and Chauvin, he didn't even flinch when that request by one of the fellow officers, who is also a co-defendant, made the request. So that was one of the factors considered. Another factor that the court considered was the particular cruelty that was exhibited. And the court called it the gratuitous infliction of pain that was of a kind not usually associated with this type of crime. You know, that there had to be some sinister, some level of diabolical premeditation while this was going on, which resulted in pain that Mr. Floyd endured. And, you know, he literally was begging for his life, you know, while he lay there. And Chauvin saw this, he heard this, and he knew he was being recorded. We watched a human being die in front of our very eyes. Now, if you take a moment and you think about that, we see it in movies all the time, but that is acting. Very few people see another human being deliberately do something where they know that their actions are resulting in the death of another person, where you could stop your activity midstream. It is abhorrent. And the court made clear that that particular cruelty was another factor which was substantial and compelling enough to sentence Chauvin outside of the presumptive guideline range. Now there were two other factors that the court mentioned but did not rely on. One was the presence of children at the scene. The court made clear children were there, but I'm not going to rely on that factor to take me over the top and outside of the presumptive sentencing range. In addition, there was another factor pertaining to the group of officers as a whole, somewhat of a conspiracy, that would have also given the court the ability to exceed the presumptive sentencing guideline range. But the court determined that these other officers, although present, their actions were not featured in the trial, and that there was no finding that these particular officers have the requisite knowledge and intent to be considered offenders at that particular moment, even though we're not trying to exonerate them. It just wasn't proven during the trial that there was complicity between the officers at the trial, and the court is restricted only by what the evidence and the facts are during the trial. So, but for the four stated reasons, the court had enough with respect to the cruelty that took place pertaining to this particular offense to make a decision that it was going to sentence Derek Chauvin outside of the presumptive guideline range position of trust. So that's how the court kind of got to a point where it was going to do what it did. The court actually made a comparison also of other similar cases that where people were kind of sentenced to things outside the guideline range. And I sent you and you may publish if you'd like. I mean, it's a public document, the court sentencing order and memorandum, which lays out everything that I just said, and also as an attachment, which is appended to the court's order, includes the sentencing guideline range and several cases where the court was involved in a sentencing, and it sort of gives you what happened in those cases, like the outcomes, so that you can kind of see this medley of cases from year to year to year. I think they went from some as early as 2000 and I want to say 2010 up to 2019 rather, to kind of let you see, well, here's what's been happening. So again, you know, what the court did was rational. We might not be happy with the actual sentence, but consistent with what has been happening, but in my judgment, inconsistent with the harm that we saw in the Derek Chauvin killing.
Okay. All right. We're going to take it. It's a late break, but we're going to take it anyway because we needed to hear what you had to say about that and help. Thanks for breaking all of that down for us. I do want to ask you about something else when we come back. So this is G's Power Hour. I've never had some good entertainment. I'm here with Kevin Anderson, civil rights attorney here at Anderson & Welch in Florida. The number, if you have questions or comments, is 516-387-1944. G's Power Hour. I've never had some good entertainment. We'll be right back.
This is Douglas Dobbs of Dobbs Cremation and Funeral Service. We have served the Central Florida community for 29 years with quality funeral and cremation services. Honoring all religions and faiths, we have been here for many grieving families. Whether it's a complete funeral service with a burial or a simple, dignified cremation, Dobbs Cremation and Funeral Service is here for you. Located at 430 North Kirkman Road at the 408 Expressway, Dobbs Cremation and Funeral Service, 407-578-7720. Dobbs. Dedicated to serving our families.
Hi, I'm Tim Garrison. You may know me as Timmy G. Yeah, I know. It's been two decades, but I want you to know I'm back in the Arglitex. And I've got a mix of music that can help you relax and chill out. It's smooth. It's relaxing. It's chill out jazz. The soulful mix of smooth jazz, soul, and smooth R&B. So join me every Wednesday night, 10 p.m. to midnight on K-Ham Radio.
Are you chillin'?
Good afternoon. Welcome back to G's Power Hour. I've never had it so good entertainment. I am your host, G. Thanks so much for being with us today. And we're here with civil rights attorney Kevin Anderson of Anderson & Welch. We're getting kind of a recap, a follow-up on the Derek Chauvin sentencing. And I do want to ask you about a couple of things that I've came across in the news the last couple of days. And by the way, I've got to figure out a way to convert the information you sent me so that I can post it, because I tried to post it and it's like hopefully it's readable. It may look a little bit garbled, but I'd like to convert it into the format in which you sent it to me. But anyway, I wanted to ask you your thoughts about the release of court files from 57 years ago, it says, in the 1964 killings of the Civil Rights Act activists in Mississippi. I'm sure everybody's somewhat familiar with that case, at least on the fringes, with the new movie Mississippi Burning. And if you have not seen Mississippi Burning, it's easy to stream movies these days. Find a copy, you know, even if you have to go to the library and get the DVD or something like that. But it'll familiarize you with the case. But anyway, what are your thoughts about them releasing these files almost 60 years down the road? What's the hope in accomplishing this?
Those files should have been available years ago. You know, why they're getting released now is anyone's guess. I find it, you know, unfathomable that, you know, something, you know, that significant, and which was, involving of an incident which was so heinous, you know, back at that time. Here in 2021, results in our ability to have the full transparency over some of the things that were apparent, you know, years and years prior. That's my view. I don't understand why that could not have happened earlier. At all,
right?
I just don't understand that. It's beyond me. You know, we've had all these commissions. You know, we've had, you know, hangings. We've had, you know, just out and out, you know, murders where, you know, people have been abducted. You know, and you know, we get those. We get access to those files. We tried people who have been accused of civil rights violations stemming from murders and, you know, all types of violent offenses. We've actually tried people like decades later. And why those particular files were not available is beyond me.
Yeah, I don't understand it either. I mean, and we, you know, got a chance to see through a young teenager's video of the killing of George Floyd. We only get like dramatic depictions through movies and stuff in terms of what happened to these civil rights activists. By the way, their names were James Chaney, Andrew Goodman, and Michael Schwerner. Just kind of trying to imagine what happened to these guys, being buried. See the movie, because to me, even after all these years, the movie is still just like disturbing as I don't know what, you know, and just, but I mean, I'd be curious to see what's in those files, and if there's something that, I don't know, I'm thinking this may be too late to get, I guess, any additional justice of some sort. For what happened to these workers, but maybe just
some information that'll come out that, you know, that maybe kind of sheds a light on exactly what happened, and not necessarily trying to stir up any violence or, you know, ill will or anything, but just maybe clarifying exactly what happened. And, you know, hopefully, you keep saying this stuff, you hope this stuff doesn't happen again. But every now and then something rears its ugly head. I'm thinking of Ahmaud Arbery in Georgia, mm-hmm. and what, mm-hmm. what happened to him. So I just I'd be curious to see what happens to that. The other thing I wanted to ask you about, as you know, recently we had a shooting in Central Florida of a police officer, and the arrest, although no extradition yet, of the alleged shooter, 29-year-old Orthol Wallace, who was captured in Georgia. Do you think eyes were on the arrest of this particular suspect a little bit more intensely in the wake of what happened with George Floyd?
Yes, I do. I do. Yes. In the wake of George Floyd, a lot of, again, the senses have been, let's just say, jolted.
I just have to say, yeah, I just have to say, because I would think there were a lot of angry people after Mr. Wallace with that shooting in Daytona Beach. And so I'm thinking there had to be a lot of restraint going on in trying to track him down and arrest him, right?
Yeah, but I think, you know, I you know, this happened, he was arrested last week, right?
Yes, I believe so. Thursday, yeah, Thursday afternoon.
Yeah, Thursday, yeah, yeah. And as you stated to the listening audience, you know, I was really busy. I was in a murder trial myself all last mm-hmm. week, so I'm just catching up, you know, with you know, the media and everything that happened last week. So, but I saw that though. I think he was in a car or something, and,
yeah.
and they were pulling him out
of
the
car. No, he
was in
a treehouse.
Yeah, I saw that.
He was in a treehouse.
Treehouse?
He was in a treehouse.
Oh, geez. So I
yeah,
I,
and no, the alert was put out Thursday afternoon. That's when the alert was put out. I've got to go back and see exactly when the arrest occurred. Arrest was, occurred a few days ago. And then I'll find that out. But yeah, no, he was found in a treehouse. But the thing that also got me was I think he yanked off the body cam or tried to before the shooting. So I'm just curious now: are suspects or, you know, potential suspects, potential criminals or whatever, are they being instructed to grab for the body cam before you do anything else? Is that it? I would hate to think that we're trying to give criminals instructions in terms of how not to get caught or convicted or whatever.
No, I don't know why the body cam would have been something that was grabbed. The body worn camera, you know, he may have been trying to grab something else. He might have been trying mm-hmm. to push the officer. I mean, the camera it fits in the palm of your hand, all, you know, and it might have been in his actions may have been inadvertent. Yeah, so no, there's really no discussion with these guys, and the arrest takes place. It's swift. It's rather aggressive too. So I can't tell you what was going on with him, you know, hitting that or grabbing that body camera. But I just looked this up. I did see something like this, you know, and I caught it and I was wondering what was happening, you know.
Mm-hmm.
A lot happens in Florida, a lot, you know. I'm surprised that we aren't the center of more.
Well,
when I look at this.
What I think it is that, you know, we've done a good job of selling Florida as being this nice, relaxed atmosphere. You know, you just go to the beach or you go to the park and you just hang out and you just do whatever you want to do, you know, and the weather's always nice. So, you know, there's just this sense of, I guess, freedom or whatever, or comfort that we've managed to successfully sell. Unfortunately, I think it's been sold to some people that we don't need to have here in Florida. So that's what I think has happened. So.
Right, right. Well, this, okay, so, yeah, I see where, yeah, he was found in a treehouse. I see that. But they found his car in a parking lot.
Right.
Right, okay, all right. That's what's going on. Yeah, I have been, you know, trying to come back to Earth because I've been in orbit. So
right.
I, when I come back, I have like, you know, 400 emails, and then I scour all the newspapers and everything because you never know when, you know, somebody's going to ask me a question.
And bugging you about stuff.
But, yeah, so that's interesting. Yeah, that's interesting. Orthel Wallace.
Orthel Wallace.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Wow.
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah. So, I mean, and even though, and let's be clear, we're not anti-police, okay? We're not. We're pro-accountability. And so with that being said, we do want to keep Officer Rayner and his family and that community in prayer as, you know, I understand he's still in critical condition, but recovering. So.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, we want to make that clear. You know, we're doing this examination in regards to police brutality and police shootings because, you know, these are things that have happened way too long in the court over decades and centuries that we keep saying, okay, after this big bump, we hope things settle down and things correct themselves and people do the right things. And unfortunately, there's always one or a few that make it bad for everybody else on all sides.
Absolutely.
I could get in trouble for saying on all sides, but in this case, I think that's the truth. So.
Well, it doesn't seem to be stopped, these shootings and this conduct. You know, it doesn't seem to be stopping, you know, and I, you know, what we're doing even today, we're exposing certain
mm-hmm.
things, and we're making people aware that, you know, we see what you're doing. And there is some unity somewhere in an effort to try to address the harm resulting from these activities by law enforcement. Did you see the Winston Smith Jr. event, the another shooting in Minnesota, a car shooting there? I believe it may have been even Minneapolis. Did you see that? Another shooting?
I think I heard about it in passing, and I have to go, you know, I mean, unfortunately, there's so much stuff going on. You just have to sit down for a moment and play catch up on some of this stuff. And some of it you just really like, oh, not again, you know. But,
it's just outrageous.
What do you,
I mean, you can make a living, and I do. What am I talking about? You could. That's what I do, you know. He was apparently in a vehicle, and the police, you know, did a traffic stop, and he's alleged to have had a firearm, and they shot him, you know. And there was a passenger in the car. Also, now, I don't know who's written, who isn't accurate. I'm just telling you that somebody got shot, you know, in Minnesota, Hennepin County, all right, same county, you know, where the Chauvin thing took place. It's, you know, you're looking at this and you're wondering, like, well, wait a minute, man. Is this like the shooting demons? Have they taken up residence, you know, like within a 100-mile radius of Minneapolis? Because a lot of stuff is happening over there, you know, and you're wondering what's going on out there in the Midwest. What type of energy do these officers have, or do these people have, you know, who are being shot? What's going on? These orbits seem to like collide and explode when they run into each other.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and unfortunately, it's summer, and there's always that excuse that the heat makes people do crazy things. I mean, I don't know. I think for me, the heat in Florida just would make me want to go run through a water fountain or something. I mean, seriously, that's not as crazy as it's probably going to get for me. But that's a whole nother argument. I think that we fail as humans sometimes, even though we kind of want things our own way. There's sometimes where self-restraint is required and needs to be practiced. And I think and thinking before acting, think, unfortunately, there's not a lot of that going on at this point, not a lot of thinking before acting. And you know, I think sometimes you just need to take a breath, take a pause, you know. One other thing I wanted to ask you about, I don't know if you kept up on this, and if not, we can talk about it another time. These New York lawmakers are filing a civil rights suit against NPD over police tactics, I guess, when they were protesting for the against what the killing of George Floyd in New York. State Senator Zilmer Myrie and Assemblywoman Diana Richardson, according to this article, this is from New York 4, they're suing, alleging that police officers used excessive force against them during the early days of the protests against the George Floyd killing. They said officers used bikes and pepper spray to violently attack the lawmakers on one of the first nights of widespread protests last year after Floyd's death. The reason I wanted to bring this case up, because I wanted to ask you, in the wake of, it seems, this of a steady stream of new laws against protests, would this be a case that would challenge some of these new laws?
No. I think that their lawsuit was filed under 42 U.S.C. 1983, and they were actually challenging suing the police for excessive force and also a violation of their freedom of speech or freedom of expression. They're going after these folks, you know, based on existing law, which allows them to pursue the type of things that they experienced. The new laws that are coming out, particularly, I guess you're talking about a law similar to the one that was just passed here in Florida, the anti-protest law, that type of thing. Is that
mm-hmm.
what you're trying to compare?
Mm-hmm.
With that law, I mean, we haven't actually had to really deal with a challenge yet here, and it's coming. But no, in New York, both Representatives Myrie and Richardson, they're pissed off, man, because they got basically manhandled because they look like just regular people, and they were out there in the mix, and they got jacked up, you know, and they're saying, look, man, you know, you shouldn't have assaulted us, you know, you shouldn't have illegally detained us. And you certainly, you know, don't have a right to curtail our speech. That is going to be an interesting lawsuit because I can actually pull it. And I would have actually had a heads up, man. I could pull anything, man, and talk about it. You know?
I know you can. But we got to go.
Okay.
So, you know, you're welcome back anytime. We can talk about that and some other things another time. Thank you, Kevin Anderson of Anderson & Welsh. Appreciate it. Have a blessed day.
My pleasure.
Safe.
Thank you.
And happy 4th. One thing we did not get to, talking about Johnny Jones, the first African-American warrant officer in the U.S. Army. So that is posted on the G's Power Hour Facebook page. Also, don't forget, go see Summer of Soul starts this week. Please go see it this weekend, by Saturday, hopefully. Anyway. Be well, be safe, be blessed. This has been G's Power Hour. I never had it so good, entertainment. And please remember, all real power comes from God. Take care.
the highest praise. Come on, saints, yeah. Come on and give it on up. Yeah. Y'all ready? Give up and say away. Up your mouth. Come on. You gotta say something.
The word out. It's the word. Yeah.